Tweet at Today SOR.
Our next guest has played Premier League football for 7 different Premier League clubs and has 42 England caps. His previous book was called How to Be a Footballer. His new one is iRobot, How to Be a Footballer Part 2. Peter Crouch, good morning to you from Salford.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, and all the better for being able to talk to you. You've gone back to the well, so to speak, with Part 2. I mean, was that because you got such a good reaction to the first book, or you knew you had so many more stories to tell and insights to offer?
Yeah, I've loved doing it. I didn't want to do an autobiography. I wanted to sort of be a bit insightful and take fans or readers into what we do in the dressing rooms or what we do on the team buses on away trips, but bring a little bit of humour to it as well, hopefully. And that's what I've done with this second one as well.
Yeah, and you write a lot about the managers, and you've dealt with a lot of them, obviously, throughout your career. You seem to be a very big fan of Rafa Benitez and Tony Pulis as well.
Yeah, I am, yeah. I mean, if I could sort of mould a couple of them together, maybe Harry and Rafa together would be the perfect manager, really. But Harry Redknapp, yeah, Rafa Benitez, Tony Pulis, I've got a huge admiration for him. Fabio Capello, Sven-Goran Eriksson. There's been so many managers over the course of my career that have helped me. Graham Ricks being one of them, Graham Taylor another. Jerry Francis gave me my debut at QPR. I mean, they're all big names and they're all big characters. And one of the chapters was dedicated to managers. I've also got chairman as well. So it's lifting the lid a little bit on what they're like and what they get up to.
You seem to have a particular soft spot for Harry Redknapp as somebody who can get the best out of people.
Yeah, I just felt, for me, just simplified my game. Like, what we had a really successful period at Tottenham where he simplified everything. For me, he played me in the right position. He had players. We had Gareth Bale on one side. We had Aaron Lennon on another, crossing the ball for me. I had Rafa van der Vaart just off me. It was a great time to be playing football. And Harry just got me. I mean, he did sell me a few times. I know he bought me, but he did sell me a few times as well. So it wasn't all good with Harry, you know. But we had, I do like him. I mean, one particular story, he simplified Wilson Palacios' game to the point where he was one of the best defensive midfielders going at that time. And he would just go round and he'd say to Wilson, go and hunt people down, win the ball back. And he said, I don't care if Luka Modric is standing 1 yard away, you pass it to him. And he just simplified Wilson's game and just made him one of the best offensive midfielders around at that time.
And by way of contrast, who do you think were the least successful at communicating to players and getting the best out of them?
Yeah, well, I did mention Fabio Capello.
You surely
didn't
did.
Help that, it didn't help that. He didn't speak the language when he came over, and at first it was a bit of a problem, but it was one we understood because, you know, he's an Italian manager. But the fact that it went on for as long as it did, where he did struggle to communicate. Having said that, he's someone I admire, and I loved his Milan team, what he did at Real Madrid. I mean, an incredible manager, but for me, it just didn't really work with England.
Arsene Wenger described you as a basketball player. What was he referring to apart from your great height?
Well, I think that was all he was referring to be quite honest. I scored more goals in the Premier League against Arsenal than I did anyone. I think it was them and Blackburn and Middlesbrough. I always enjoyed playing and scoring against them. But Arsenal, I always had a little bit of joy. And, you know, he didn't like it. And I think my first goal against Arsenal for Southampton was quite an obvious header from a corner. And we beat them that day and he took exception to it. And I only described me as a basketball player and I felt it was quite disrespectful. So I continued to score against Arsenal, thankfully, from then on.
Now, which brings me to your chapter on strikers. You say that strikers are selfish in ways you can see and in ways you might not see. What about the ways we mightn't see?
Well, being a striker myself, listen, I know what it's like. They're selfish and you dare to score goals. Certain strikers I've played with, and you know what it's like if you're playing for England or you're playing for Liverpool, you're playing for Tottenham, there's so much competition for places and there's only one. Usually there's only one striking role now. I mean, you know, we used to play with two up front and a lot of teams now play with one. There's not many positions up for grabs. So you have to be selfish. And it's weird because I class myself as unselfish off the field. But on the field, you do have to have that single-mindedness if you want to play as a striker for a big club. And that's something I had to sort of drill into myself really at a young age.
You say strikers are happy if the team loses, but if they've scored themselves, they're okay.
Some are. Some genuinely are. You know, I wouldn't throw myself into that category. But I know people that genuinely would be happy if they scored. And obviously they want the team to win, but their job is to score goals. And I know certain players that would actually enjoy scoring rather than and the team losing.
Obviously part of scoring goals has to do with penalties as well. You describe penalties and the routine around them. Just remind us about your own routine.
It was one of those things. I would have liked to have taken a hell of a lot more penalties than I did in my career. I didn't take many. But the reason why is because there was like a Jermaine Defoe, a Rafa van der Vaart, a Steven Gerrard, a Frank Lampard in the teams that I played in. It's a question that me and my mates talk about as well. If you had a penalty to save your life, who would you pick?
Oh, you're asking me who I would
I'm
pick.
Asking you, yeah.
Wayne
Over the
Rooney.
Course of the whole... Wayne Rooney! For me, Shearer, I would go Shearer or Harry Kane. I like the way they bury penalties, and I think that's a discussion that I've had and I have in the book as well. I think those are the people that I'd pick.
Peter, you talk as well about the lives that footballers enjoy. Now, those of us who watch from afar can only marvel or just wonder and look on at with a sense of awe about the way you earn such vast riches. How you are so pampered, how you have to do very, very little for yourselves. I mean, how close then can you be to the real world?
As close as you can be. I think the thing is, we know that, we're well looked after, but the reason that is because, so we can concentrate on the job in hand, which is winning games and playing football, and everything else seems to be taken away from you. And so you don't have to worry about things and, worrying about even getting your passport to the airport, that's taken away from you because 2-3 days before you fly, you'll have to hand it in to someone who's a lot more responsible than a footballer, shall we say.
And also, just packing your bag. You don't even have to pack a bag, do you?
You don't really, no. I mean, the kit, all the leisure wear, the boots, shin pads, everything will be taken for you, really. And all you got to do is get yourself to the airport without your passport and you'll be fine.
And maybe bring a toilet bag.
Yeah, that's a little bit of toiletries and usually an iPad.
Yeah, you talk about a lot of guys having identical toilet bags.
Yeah. Well, the Louis Vuitton toilet bag is the staple of the Premier League. Everyone's got one. And that's hilarious when you're all trying to find yours when you get to the other end. Because, you hand them all in and everyone's got the same one. So when you land the other end and everyone's fighting over the same Louis Vuitton wash bags, you have to look inside them to see whose is whose.
And the odd man out is the one who turns up with a book.
Yeah, I mean, over the course of my career, there wasn't many who read books. The odd occasion it would happen, they'd usually get things lobbed at them.
And the nightlife. I mean, money no object, obviously, but there could be a sense of competitiveness about how bills were paid at the end of an evening.
Yeah, we'll play credit card roulette, and that is after a meal. Rather than pay for it individually, we'll usually throw all our credit cards on the table and let the waitress pick out who's paying. We have another game as well where we put all the phones in the middle and whoever touches their phone first would pay for the meal. And I think this is a good way of doing it in life in general, really. The amount of people that look at their phones whilst in the company of other people, I go mad at my missus for it. She's talking to people that she doesn't know on Instagram or whatever it is, when all your friends and family are sitting around a table and you should be enjoying yourself with them. So put your phone in the middle of a table, try it. It's a good thing to do. Put it in the middle of a table. The first one to touch it pays the bill. I guarantee you'll have a better conversation.
We were talking on the show last week, actually, about good and bad manners, and that was one of the things which came up in the conversation. Which teammates did you tend to gravitate towards, say, for partying and nights out?
Well, listen, nights out and things like that, I mean, you're governed by when the games are and stuff, really. But the odd night out occasion, there's been a few over the years. Glenn Johnson's a good mate of mine. Steve Sidwell's a good pal of mine. Sean Derry, I've had some good nights with him. Diddy Haman is certainly someone that I would take with me. Wayne Rooney, probably. There's been a few over the years that I wouldn't mind having a night out with.
And coming back to the food, Gareth Bale, you've got a description of his diet, and he's a man of simple taste. Wouldn't that be fair to say?
Yeah, well, the thing is with football, one of the one of the things that I've enjoyed coming out of the game is the food. It's just, it's fuel. And, you know, I can't stand it when you've got an early kickoff, say a 12:30 kickoff, you're eating pasta and chicken at 9 o'clock in the morning. It's not fun, I'll be honest. And it's one of the downsides. And there's not much sauce, there's not much flavour in the stuff you eat. You just eat to fuel for a football match. And I'd always try different things, and I looked at Gareth Bale and I was thinking, you know, he's flying, and what is he eating? And he would just eat beans on toast. He would have beans on toast before a game, and I'd watch him be quicker than everyone else, stronger than everyone else, and run further than everyone else. And I was thinking, what's in those beans? I tried them myself. Didn't quite work for me.
Horses for courses, I suppose. Another one who had his own way of doing things, James McLean at Stoke.
James McLean. I've seen some things in my time, but brown sauce with James felt like an addiction. And he was similar. I mean, lots of ways to Gareth. I mean, he could run forever. One of the fittest lads in the team, but he would have brown sauce on everything, absolutely everything, even stuff with sauce on it.
Really? And even the pudding, even the rice pudding?
Yeah, I have seen him put it in rice pudding. He's going to hate me for saying this, especially on Irish radio as well. I've properly stitched him up, but he was a great lad. But he genuinely had brown sauce on everything.
He's somebody who's clearly got a mind of his own. He's prepared to be independent and to stand out. And I'm thinking, particularly now with coming up to February, he was somebody who just has always refused to wear the poppy and taken quite an amount of abuse for it.
Yeah, he took a hell of a lot of stick. I mean, I only played with James for a season or two, but you know, that's his beliefs, and I suppose you've got to respect that. You know, being an Englishman myself, it's you know, obviously I'm happy to wear it, and I wear it with pride. But you know, people are from different backgrounds, and I think people are also quick to judge, and I think you can't judge someone if you don't know their situation. And I think James has got his beliefs, and I know we always respected it as players in the dressing room.
Yeah, but maybe not as the same respect extended from the terraces, particularly say by opposing fans. And this is something now which is it's become very topical, Peter. Particularly say with what happened with England versus Bulgaria, the match being stopped twice, and a much stronger line being taken against racism. Do you think that tolerance might be extended now to James McLean?
Well, like we say, with the racism, and you know, I can only go on what I've been accustomed to, and you know, there has been racism in those countries, Bulgaria being one of them. I saw it in under 18 level, under 21 level, and it's obviously got to be stamped out. I mean, it was it needs to be addressed. I thought they dealt with it magnificently well, and like you say, people have their beliefs. I mean, that's not a belief that should be tolerated at all. James McLean's is an entirely different matter.
So your own future, you've had a fantastic career, very successful. You've now got these books and you do some punditry. What about management? Does that hold much of an appeal for you?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's something that I've looked at. I have done my coaching badges. I'm on my A licence now, and it's something that does interest me. But I'm loving what I'm doing at the moment. I'm absolutely loving it. I've got, you know, the podcast and the book that I do, and you know, various TV stuff that I've thrown myself into, and it seems to have gone well, and I'm really enjoying it. What I would like to do is maybe coach some kids. You know, my kids are old enough to play football. Maybe I'll get into that and start helping at grassroots level.
Best of luck, whatever way your career path turns. Peter, thank you so much indeed for joining us from Salford. That's Peter Crouch there. His latest book, How to Be a Footballer, Part 2, published by Ebury Press. Peter, good morning and thank you.